Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter, it's Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's still the summer. We're roasting here in the Bay Area.
Oh, my God.
It's like we talked last week, except that was your astral spirit self from Big Sur, from floating above Big Sur.
It was, and boy, did I have a good time in Big Sur.
I bet you did.
It was very creative, let's put it that way.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
It's good to get away. Clear your head.
Oh, my gosh. Super needed. Very much needed.
Mm-hmm. It's good, but we're back now. Back in it. Back in the mud.
We're in the thick of things right now.
We are, and they are thick, those things.
Super.
I don't know what that means. Just a thing that I said.
Wow.
I don't even know
where to go there.
Nope.
Yeah. Okay.
Me neither.
I'm going to ignore it, though.
Let's dive into some things that you've written that we should talk about, because this is a podcast about television, I am told. You wrote a piece with Dan Feinberg. This is one of your back and forths about summer TV, which I enjoyed reading. The idea of basically, this is your editors come to you and say, hey, why don't you guys talk about whatever you've been doing for the last 3 months? And you both look at each other like, okay, I guess. And you talk about sort of like the fact that summer TV, honestly, they just used to take the summer off. And now there's stuff everywhere. There's summer TV is a thing. And there's like the season, it never ends. So there's always new stuff, including the summer.
Yeah. I mean, you used to be able to make an argument that, I mean, I still think people sometime around September are like, especially on the East Coast when the weather's not so good. They're like, kids are back in school. They're like, I think there's supposed to be more TV now. But you and I know, Dan knows that it's really all year long. And you know, for years, the networks just stopped in May and the cable people started in June. And those were like their own different seasons. But then once cable got good and they got popular, they moved all their stuff into the quote unquote, you know, broadcast TV season. And then things blurred. And now with streaming and whatnot and just more competition. And you probably would throw this in there if I would stop talking. The DVR basically changed the idea of a season because you could watch stuff whenever.
Sure.
So it doesn't really exist. But yeah, we got this idea, which was also funny because we were at TCA. I was only going to be there a week. Dan is the outgoing president. And he was there like every day for like a month. And then I was going on vacation. So we had a lot to watch and catch up on in a very, very little time. So we were kind of laughing to ourselves. But you know what? We were already drowning in it, so it kind of worked out fine.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. I liked how you had the difference between a show that you're watching like carefully as a critic versus a show that you just kind of don't worry about it. And so, like, you talked about The Rook, which Dan is down on because he says they sort of, like, took the fun and they kind of took it out and made it dour and gritty and boring, he says. And you're like, yeah, you know, I didn't read the book and I'm not really hooked on it, but like it's easier to watch stuff when you can watch it distractedly, which you can't do if you're a TV critic. And you mentioned Jack Ryan as another good example of that. And I thought that was really an interesting difference, like what you are working on versus things that you can kind of watch. Like you're watching The Boys and really liking it on Amazon, which I've heard really great things about from everybody, but Dan reviewed it. So you just got to watch it and that probably does affect your outlook on it.
Yeah. And it was really interesting too, because The Boys is actually in a, it came out of a film festival where they only showed one episode and, you know, THR policies, we review out of the festival. So Dan only got to see one basically. And I think he may have watched the second one by the time we had this talk. But, you know, in our business, a lot of times you just got to put it away and go. But yeah, I didn't have that. I didn't have that commitment. And so I loved it. I sort of fell into it and I was like, wow, this is actually really good. And it just gets getting better. And he did Jet, which is, I think, is a really fun, super escapist, really great, exploration of the genre. So those things were fun. And I fessed up in here to having, you know, binge Jack Ryan, and I haven't finished yet, but I really like Hannah, and because this doesn't, I don't have to think too much about it. Whereas, like, as much as I love Perpetual Grace Limited, which I think is fantastic, I'm sure not many people are watching it. That's something I'm looking at it like a painterly, like I'm in a museum looking at this piece of art, and I'm trying to deconstruct it in ways that takes a lot of more thought. Same thing with like Succession, when you're really working on that. And, you know, obviously we didn't really, well, we did talk a little bit about Years and Years, but those are the ones you really pay a lot of attention to. They might not be the most enjoyable, but yeah, we were kind of all over the map, and it was fun. It was kind of fun to see what we were both into.
Also, this just in, I've seen the first two episodes of Perpetual Grace Limited now.
Oh, you're in now.
I'm in the 30-day Epics trial, Tim. I told my wife, quick, watch Get Shorty Season 2.
Yes.
And maybe we'll throw in some Pennyworth there, too. But we're watching Perpetual Grace Limited. And yes, that is a different... That is not one of those, it's summer and this goes down easy kind of shows. That is... We got a letter coming up later about it. But it is... But it's very enjoyable. Although I will say episode 2 played on essentially all of my wife's phobias. I mean, there could have been a snake, I guess. But otherwise, like, she was really uneasy afterward. And I was like, yeah, I can see that. There's a lot going on in that show. But I'm really enjoying it so far. So just trying to take it slow, doing the slow binge.
I think it just gets better and it gets better. But it doesn't feel like a quote-unquote summer. It's not a beach read,
no,
as the kids say. The kids don't say that, by the way, but
no.
It's not a beach read, and but it's very fun, and Stephen Conrad definitely has a rhythm to his writing. He's got a little working repertoire of actors who know how to do what he wants them to do. I really love what's going on there. That's just so much fun. And you know what? Hey, I'm glad you revisited this topic of actually the Epics. They did a 30-day trial. That's kind of crazy in today's thing, because they don't have that many shows. You can watch all their shows in 30 days, no problem. So go for it, people.
Yep. Yeah, I think so. Okay, let's talk about Netflix. And this is funny. You wrote this piece about how Netflix may need to have to change its strategy soon, that the world is changing. And I think it's a really good piece. I imagine you've gotten some pushback from people who say it's just another TV critic complaining that they didn't get advance access to a TV show, because it sort of starts with the fact that Mindhunter, a very good show, is having its second season come out tomorrow as we record this, I believe, August 16th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they are not showing it to critics in advance. But, you know, your piece is about way more than that. It's about the mindset behind Netflix doing stuff like that, about Netflix's whole... volume strategy, where there's this question of, like, is there any must watch show on Netflix? Occasionally there are, but like, as a consumer, they're just hoping there's so much on Netflix that you're like, well, I can't give up Netflix. And you are asking the question, you know, is that the right strategy going forward for them? Now that they've built up this big catalog of originals, do they need to spend more time cultivating and marketing hit shows instead of sort of letting it all just drop, and it's the gestalt of all of Netflix that is the thing that draws you to them?
Yeah, it's just, and I was careful at the top, I think, to sort of say, look, I've done a lot of these, you know, streaming war stories over the last couple of years. They've increased in intensity as we're getting closer to this becoming a reality. You know, just the other day, right when I got back from Big Sur, Apple TV released their first basically trailer for one of their shows, and they hadn't done that yet. So it's like, it's, you know, if you're paying attention, the little pieces are falling in place, and Disney Plus has been on a roll as far as like talking about stuff it's going to unroll, casting shows. So yeah, I looked at it. So I was being very careful, but I was saying, look, I have. Been one of the leading people saying you're not going to kill Netflix so easy. You know, don't be so sure that a bad week is going to hurt it, even when they lost, you know, $24 billion in valuation in like 6 days or something. And historically, I've been behind it, but it really is kind of the, and I did make light of it. I was like, something where you don't get a show, is this a tipping point? And it's not, but it really was reflective of their personality inside the company and their attitude right now in August of 2019, which is still, in my view, super close to the full on streaming wars, but probably in their minds, still months and months away before Disney comes out and then the rest of them. So I get that they're still feeling kind of comfortable about that. That's why they didn't you know, take Mindhunter as a show that I think is really good, and they don't actually have, seriously, they don't actually have a lot of really good shows. And by that I mean, like, Emmy-worthy shows.
Like top,
they have shows,
the top tier, the top shelf
stuff. The top
stuff.
Tier, yeah. They have shows I like to watch, you know, and I think you could make a real argument, a good argument, that they have, you know, in Ozark is a really strong drama. I know Dan really does not like that show. I like it. I think it's a really good drama. It's getting nominations. The Crown, which I think people probably thought was more of like a PBS show, it's really strong, and it had to go, it handled its variations in storytelling over the seasons really well. Mm-hmm. And the Freshman series, Russian Doll, is also really good.
Yeah.
And
I Sex Education in there too. I think that's really good. But
yeah,
when you think of TV's highest level prestige, what's on now?
Yes.
It's how often is it that there's a Netflix show in that rarefied, you know, five best, eight best comedy or drama?
That's not. And the thing with Mindhunter is I think that it could be. It was a really good show.
Really good. Really good. For those who haven't seen it, I think we talked about it. I caught up with it much later. But it's great. It's really great.
It's just like, and the acting performances are spot on. And I think because it's David Fincher and it's about serial killers and it is a little scary, you're thinking, oh, it's going to be this splatter fest and it's going to be, you know, there's a lot of bad stuff actually is not shown.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a story about how profiling came about to the FBI.
Right.
And it's really well done. And I can't believe that this show came out at the tail end of 2017. Here we are. In, you know, just past the middle part of 2019, and they're going to launch it tomorrow, and it's not tomorrow being Friday, whenever we come out, whenever you listen to this, but it'll be out, and there's no press. They're doing three shows for fans at a movie theater, and like that's in 2019. That's not how you promote your show. But so it wasn't that I didn't get that. I was just thinking, is that really what you want to do for this show? It really surprises me, but it's the old school thinking. So I use that as a jumping off point. As you know, you've read it. I really like this piece. I had fun writing it. I think the idea is that, like, they sell volume. That was a great idea until it's not going to be a great idea, which is soon. I think they're still saying, this is still a great idea. And I'm saying in this piece, yeah, maybe, but not in about 3 months from now.
Right. It's been a brilliant idea because they've been anticipating what is now happening, which is the crown jewels of other companies' libraries are getting pulled off of Netflix. And they now have built up a library of originals, right? All of the originals since House of Cards, since Lilyhammer, right? Really, I mean, we all think House of Cards, but they're going back years now, so they're going to lose Friends and they're going to lose The Office, but they're still going to have the catalog. Great, they've got a catalog now, and they're going to be able to bid for certain items in other catalogs. Great, but going forward, maybe that's not your strategy.
Yeah, and we're going to have to check the box because I'm actually going to I don't always do this, but I'm going to read this little paragraph that I wrote, which I think sums the whole thing up. I said, look at it this way. Selling volume is great when you want market dominance, especially over the early days Hulu or the We Sell TV shows in addition to gadgets era Amazon. But now both of those streamers have their shit together and they're making really good TV series. And as I note here, that's already a problem. It is a problem. People are, you know, they're aware of those, and they're really into Hulu and Amazon already. And then I said, then here comes Disney Plus, Apple Plus, HBO Max right behind it, NBC Universal soon after. And I think the whole point of this column is in this sentence where I said volume. The whole streaming universe is going to be a volume. Mm. So it's like, I don't know if that's your strategy anymore. It can't be. And I know for a fact that they really want to do better at their Emmys. And you can't have both. You can't say we deal in volume and we don't actually even acknowledge a show. Because what they're doing with Mindhunter is basically not even acknowledging it. And they're just saying, you'll find it and it'll be part of our package. And you buy our package. We're the brand. You know, all of us in our little universe is our brand. I don't know if that works, Jason, going forward, because you need good shows and you need shows where, like, everybody's talking about all your shows, and that happens on HBO and FX, and you know it's going to happen on Disney with all their super popular IP. It's going to really I think maybe change it. I didn't want to be in this piece. I didn't want to say they have to change it right now, but I'm just like, I think what I'm saying here is I don't think this is going to work in the future. And are they really going to change? Because I think that Netflix is pretty nimble and they're really smart and they can change if they want to. But with Mindhunter, I think that's an example of them saying, nah, we're not worried yet.
Yeah. And I wonder if they look at their stats and feel like they have the ability just with their algorithm and just with their interface to drive people to anything they want. And so I wonder if part of their attitude is, we don't even need to do press about Mindhunter because it's going to be at the top of the page on Friday and everybody's going to see it and it's going to do its numbers and our press wouldn't have made an appreciable impact on that. And I could see them saying that. I don't know if that's true or not, but I can see them feeling like they're so powerful at this point. Now, that's not going to reach out to people who don't have Netflix. And if you're somebody who likes that show, they need to do it, you know, point you at it, or you're going to miss that it came back, which is not great. But, you know, I could see them having that attitude, which is like, look, we're going to put it on the top of Netflix on Friday, and it's going to drive millions of views over the weekend, and we didn't need to do any press at all. Maybe.
Yeah. And you point out at least one of the two problems of that. And one is that,
I'm on vacation this weekend and I love Mindhunter. And by the time I come back, Mindhunter is already scrolled off to the next thing.
And if you don't have Netflix, you're not driving people to your service with a show that is really good. You could be looking like, hey, and you know, look, the reason that they were in trouble recently is they lost subscribers. So that's a factor. So if you want to attract people, you need to say, look, people who do not have a Netflix, we have this really great show called Mindhunter. And then people who are already in your universe, who are overwhelmed with your content, people are listening right now, and I guarantee you they're going, what's Mindhunter? Tim said something about this about beginning of FBI profiling. People listening to this podcast have Netflix and have not watched the show. And part of what happens when you actually, whether you value a review or not, part of what happens is people, whether they tune in immediately or not, they read it and they're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. That sounds kind of interesting. I'll put that on my list. I'll get to it, even if they don't want to watch it right away. But you know, like, I wanted to know what The Boys was about. I read Dan's piece and like, you know, like, you just like, what is this show that's coming over from England? And you read a piece and you're like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. I'll watch that. Or maybe conversely, you could just say, oh, not in a million years would I watch that. But at least you know something about it. And Netflix's assumption is that they can just put a title at the top of your screen and you'll watch it. That's algorithm-driven insanity.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted to mention another thing about Netflix that came up that I think is another question about overall content strategy, and I'm curious what you think about it. We have talked about this in the past, but I figure we might as well say it again because here we are. Netflix made a deal with Benioff and Weiss. 5 years, yes. $250 million to make TV for Netflix. These are guys who made one of the biggest shows of all time, Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. However, they've never done anything else. And they're locked up with Lucasfilm on a series of new Star Wars movies. And yet Netflix is going to write a check for $250 million over 5 years for them to do TV on Netflix. I think this comes back to our classic question about everybody's trying to make these deals with high-profile creators. And one, are you missing the up-and-coming creators? Two, just because somebody's created something in the past, does that mean that they have a good chance of creating a hit in the future? And three, are all of these creators and production deals created equally? So what do you think about Benioff and Weiss and $250 million from Netflix?
Yeah, I'm already on the record as saying I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't, and not just for those guys. I don't think I see why you want to do the Ryan Murphy deals and the Shonda Rhimes deals because they have a proven track record.
Yeah, I'd say J.J. Abrams, too. He's done so much in his production company, so many different successful TV shows and movies. So, like, I get why they're talking about $500 million for him from somebody.
Sure. But I just think that even in those deals, right, though, the problem is, like, not all the Shonda shows are good.
Right.
Right. And certainly not all the Ryan Murphy shows are good.
Certainly.
So it's just you're banking on a name and, you know, basically you're saying this is a good hitter in baseball.
Yeah.
And even if he strikes out a bunch,
they're
he's
going to
hit a
hits.
Couple homers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
for sure.
But over these gigantic overall deals are not good for the business, I think, because what they do is they take money away from people who make shows for the first time. Like, let's not forget that Matt Weiner once made one show. And it's one of the greatest shows, if not the greatest drama ever made. But he didn't have he didn't come to bat in this era where all these overall deals might have excluded him. And like all these new people that came up through FX and HBO and it was their first shows, or David Simon with The Wire and The Corner, those guys need a chance. And like now they're, of course, these guys are in the record books. Their history shows how great they are. But everybody needs a shot. So what about the people in the future who they haven't done that much? They just need a shot. And I think these overall deals are not great. And as far as these Benioff and Weiss, they were working with IP already. They already had they had books.
Yeah.
And like, I it's great for them. I'm a capitalist. I'm all for anybody getting as much money as they possibly can. But what else are they going to do? Like, they have to come up with their own stories now.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, unless they go buy some IP and develop it. But I don't know. Yeah. I don't think it's a great idea.
This one just seemed especially out of whack because mm-hmm. they have no history. Like, and one of the way you could argue that you cultivate that new generation of talent is because they emerge from some of these other producers' places. Like Damon Lindelof came out of the J.J. Abrams farm system, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The guy running Star Trek for CBS was a J.J. Abrams guy. Right? They are producing. I'm sure Shonda Rhimes has produced showrunners from out of her production staff. Like, so there is a whole team there. These
yeah.
guys, you know, I know they've got the people they worked on Game of Thrones with, but, you know, and again, I like Game of Thrones, and these guys might do good work, but it's like, they're not a production company with a track record of a lot of stuff. They're just a couple of dudes who made a hit show once. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It seems this seems like that deal. It's like in sports. We'll say like a baseball thing where there's like a really big contract and you're like, oh, you're going to
yeah.
regret. You know, Bryce Harper is great, but you're really going to regret paying Bryce Harper
oh my God,
in
yeah.
2030.
Yeah,
right.
The Bryce Harper deal is a disaster. Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. and he's great, but you know, everybody bid on him and it got run up, and everybody's desperate. They're worried that there's not enough talent out there. I guess the counter argument is Netflix is spending so much money on content that they can probably afford to pay for big names and also smaller creators. But I don't know. It just seems like a mistake to like these guys haven't. It's just not a good bet. It strikes me, but we'll see. I guess.
Yeah, it's
plus they're working on Star Wars.
Yeah, they're not, because they're busy.
So they're distracted.
Yeah. And a series of Star Wars stuff. And it's anybody in the old network world will tell you the last thing you want is somebody who's working on multiple projects, because the reason you hired them is for them to focus on what's in front of them.
Yeah.
Not focus on five things.
Before we get to letters, a couple other things, a review and a piece of news. Let's go with the news first, and I have a tweet from a listener here that I can throw in, which is listener Chris,
okay,
who wants to ask why CBS and Viacom separated in the first place, and did it accomplish anything, or was it just a blunder? CBS and Viacom are now back; they're going back together. So Paramount, Viacom is Paramount, and MTV, and Comedy Central, and BET, and Nickelodeon, basically, and then there's CBS. Mm-hmm. And CBS is CBS and Showtime, and I think Simon Schuster, and they're all mm-hmm. getting pushed back
yeah,
together.
Part of the CW, yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah, right, and half the CW. So, any thoughts about this? We've spitballed about this a long time. It's like it's the big fish are out there in the streaming wars these days, and CBS was this little fish.
Yeah, it's it's interesting. I look at that. I see what they did. I don't remember actually why they broke it up.
You know, it's funny. I think the reason they broke it up is because the Viacom people really felt like they were getting let down by the legacy broadcast mm-hmm. TV business, and that they thought that it was like holding them back from growth in cable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And ironically, over the course of the intervening 15 years or whatever it was, there was a real left turn there, and CBS ended up doing really well and Viacom ended up doing really badly. So I think it was a blunder in a sense, because the fundamental premise of it was that cable was going to skyrocket and that CBS as a broadcast network was going to belly flop. And the truth is that CBS was a really well-managed company, and say what you will about Les Moonves, he did a really good job of adding value to that company for a lot of years, and Viacom ended up feeling like a old, trapped in cable TV kind of company. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the years where there was, there was part of the company saying we should sell, you know, because, you know, the Redstones, it's like, should we sell Paramount? Should we, you know, keep it close and keep it independent and then maybe merge back again? Merge talks have been going on for a really long time. I think that that's the reason why. I mean, because Apple was rumored to be circling Paramount for a number of years, which would make a lot of sense for some ideas. They were just sitting there. But then, of course, back in the day when you and I used to think Apple was imminently going to buy something, and they haven't, and it doesn't look like they're going to anytime soon. Now I say that they'll buy something while we're making this podcast. With just reasons, I remember talking to somebody like, why hasn't that been sold? And the feedback was they don't want to sell it, and they want to be its own thing. And now they're back together. I don't know what they make now that they're back together. I don't know what kind of happy family that becomes. I don't think it really impacts based on the properties that they own. It doesn't really impact my life that much. So
yeah,
interested.
The CBS All Access gains some content from Comedy Central and Nickelodeon, right, to make their streaming thing a little bit more viable, interesting. And the Paramount library is good. It puts Star Trek under one roof again, which is it's a little bit like Disney. You know, the last least important thing about Disney buying Fox was that they got the X-Men and Fantastic Four back, but they did. And I think similarly, having Star Trek under one roof, it's not that important, but I think it will be good for the people who are doing Star Trek. But, you know, I think the real open question is, what do they do now? Because I've got to think maybe Sherry Redstone's plan is to go buy some stuff and bulk up CBS even more so that it can at least try to compete with NBC Universal and Warner Media and Disney, which is a tough challenge. But I mean, I don't think any of the big fish are capable of buying them at this point. So the only real option they've got is to buy some other stuff and try to bulk up a little bit.
It's like a succession plot.
Speaking of which, you reviewed the new season of Succession. We should mention that at least.
It's great. Everybody should go. If you haven't watched the first season, go watch it. It's phenomenal. I think the second season has been better, and I loved the first season. I would say, I think we probably have mentioned this before. I'm a broken record, so that would not be a shocker. But I thought every episode of the first season of Succession got better and better and better. And it is part comedy and it is part drama, and it leans heavily towards the drama at the end in very surprising ways. Second season starts and there's so much very, very funny, searing, wince-inducing comedy. It's great, but you know there's more. I mean, based on, you know, how adept they are stepping into both arenas, I know for a fact that season two is going to roll into more dramatic territory. It's fun in a very much like the thick of it / Veep way that they're dealing with things in the beginning of the second season. I'm sure things will become more stark going on. It was probably, to me, was one of the most surprising series last year. And people didn't want to get involved in it because it was like a story of 1%, like billionaire 1%ers. Right. And like, it was basically the Murdochs. It's, you know, it looks like it's based on the Murdochs, right? And so, this right-wing family that's a media conglomerate, and they're awful people, and you think, why would I want to watch that? Well, you know, put that aside. It's not a documentary. It's very well done, and the characters are well written. It's funny, and it's dramatic, and it's one of the better shows on TV. So if you haven't watched it, get on it, and it's really good.
All right. We have letters, but first we should do a sponsor, I think.
Woohoo!
Yes, because there's money to be made. Money, 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 money.
We like money.
And
we're not Benioff and Weiss, man. Got to get some money.
Yeah, we're working here. So this one is good. We're going to have a little, it's a sponsor read plus intervention. It is It's Mack Weldon. This episode is brought to you by Mack Weldon, our friends again.
Yay, Mack Weldon.
I wear stuff from Mack Weldon all the time. I'm wearing some underpants from them right now. I said it. Look, I did it again.
Wow.
Mack Weldon is a premium men's essential brand. They believe in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. The fabric stuff, it's just high quality stuff. Whether it's underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, or sweatpants. I have a pair of their sweatpants. I have a pair of their shorts. I have their socks. I have their underwear. It's all good. I have an undershirt. It's all really good. It's better, I'm telling you, than whatever you're wearing now, Tim. This is the intervention part. The good news is I have a gift certificate for you, but you actually have to go to Mack Weldon's website. Super easy to use, by the way. Very clear and convenient website to order stuff that you can use working out or going to work or traveling or just living your life and watching TV if you want. You can do that.
Yeah,
that would work.
That's kind of what I do. Yeah.
Work. And if you don't like that first pair of underwear, you can just keep them and tell them and they'll give you your money back. So no questions asked for anybody to try Mack Weldon. Go to their easy website. Put on that underwear. Put on those shirts. They look good. They perform well. They've got the kind with silver that like fights the microbes so it doesn't smell because the silver kills the bacteria that generate the smell. It's science, people. Science. In underpants form. Super easy to order on their website, so you should do that, Tim.
I'm going to do it.
And report back in the next ad.
I would be disappointed if this title of this podcast is not Science in Underpants.
Yeah, I don't know. I hate to have the titles be about the ads,
about
but
the
you
ads.
Never know. Maybe.
Yeah, it might be good, though. It could be. It's a contender, I think, for top three slot.
So, dear listener, use the promo code TVTM. And you'll get 20% off your first order at MackWeldon.com. That's MackWeldon.com and promo code TVTM for 20% off. Thank you, Mack Weldon, for supporting the TV Talk Machine.
Woohoo!
Very nice, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see our letters. I got the letters.
I love letters.
All right. This one's from Stuart in the 765. Stuart says, I'm writing from the 765 via the 504, then the 706, then the 727, then the 352, then the 765 for the first time, then the 281. Don't go into academia, kids. With two items, now the Perpetual Grace Limited has racked up season one. First, it's remarkable how much of the show winks at Patriot viewers. The introduction of each Patriot actor is treated like a celebrity guest spot with a wink or a nod or a cheer of recognition. This culminated in the eventual reveal of the creepy Undertaker, which was as pleasing as it was unsurprising. I haven't gotten to that part yet. This another subtle nod to Patriot was the single blurry camera shot from Glenn's post-head trauma point of view, mirroring Lakeman's visual deterioration. This has to be a callback, right? I guess my point is Easter eggs are fun, and I wonder to what extent the showrunners expected anyone who didn't already watch Patriot to watch this show. There's definitely bits of it, right? There's definitely there's some nods, there's some winks.
Well, there's Stephen Conrad has a distinct style.
Yeah. Number two, I know the season one of a show is, to paraphrase Leslie from Patriot, the optimistic season, where they do a whole plot spread, MacGuffins, herrings, etc., red herrings, but I'm a little frustrated by the lack of resolution in the Perpetual Grace Limited finale. As enjoyable as the show is, it's a bit tiring to watch because it asks you to sublimate yourself to its particular worldview. I feel like there should be some reward for 10 episodes of that beyond the wrapping up of one character arc. Plus, after the Patriot quasi-cancellation, it isn't clear to me that these guys even know how to finish a show. It would be nice to meet the viewer halfway, right? Do you have thoughts about how to balance the desire to tell an ongoing narrative with the demands of trying to make a complete season of television, especially on a show with an uncertain future? Love to your mothers, because they're the ones worth loving. Stuart in the 765.
Nice, Stuart. I have a couple thoughts on that. I think that, first of all, I think I would disagree on the conclusion of the second season of Patriot. I think that works. As much as I hate that to be the ending, I think it works. And I think when you reevaluate it in its own way, it's kind of gutting. But also, surprisingly great in its realness. I love that. To the notion of like, how do you make something? Well, first of all, television is an ongoing story. And it's not an anthology. It's an ongoing series. So, you know, you have to go from season one to season two, and you don't get a guarantee that you're going to get that second season. So if you look back at the history of all the shows that actually went on, pretty much all the writers come to the same agreement. I'm either going to make a cliffhanger and try to force the channel, the outlet, we should say, to, especially if it picks up and it does decently well, they don't know I'm going to write a cliffhanger, and then I'm going to write this cliffhanger, and then they're stuck. Well, if you were a network show, they didn't really give a damn, and they just canceled you anyway. I'm sure that there are situations in the cable world where people were like, okay, well, we'll give them one more chance. But you have to tell a story that it can't all come to the end in season one. Most of the time, you're aiming for five seasons, even still in this modern era. You're still aiming for a story that goes 3 to 5 seasons. And if you're only doing three, you like the Deuce, you better know exactly what you're doing to get those three. And if you're aiming for five, it's really hard to sort of like find a place where the first one ends, and then if it doesn't get renewed, then you have a full story when you've only told one of your five chapters. It's really hard. It's a balancing act. I don't quite know how they do it. Invariably, it does leave people a little bit in the lurch, and they wish they wanted more. However, I'm pretty confident that Epix is going to pick up Perpetual Grace for a second season. And so I think it's, until I hear otherwise, I think I'm okay with that. And then it'll be this like, okay, how are you going to end the second season? Are you going to give us a little more now that we showed our faith and we came back? Because that after the second season, kind of all bets are off. But if you look at the history of streaming, it doesn't always happen. But a lot of outlets they feel like it's just better to give at least decent creators as two seasons, because it looks better for them anyway. It's going to stay on the channel in perpetuity. I'm sure I botched that.
Sure.
But you're going to, when you're somebody who's looking, this goes back to the whole Netflix volume thing. If you're flipping around the channel, better to start Patriot if you know that you can do both seasons. Whereas if you've never heard of it, it's like, oh, I remember this show got canceled. It's only one season. I don't even want to watch that. Technically, they want a little bit more. They want a bigger book on the shelf, for lack of a better explanation. So I think they'll get a second season.
I'd imagine that if you're dealing with creators, too, you don't want to get a reputation as just canning shows right away. So, you know, having a reputation to stick with something a little bit might be helpful, too.
Yes.
Get a quick trigger. You want to be in business with a guy who's just going to be like, nah, I liked your show, but now it's canceled.
Yeah, it's tough. I feel for the creators, because you can't tell all of your story in one season, and you have to leave a bunch of, and most of these guys, you know, when I say guys, I mean women and men. Most of these writers, they know where they're going. They're not making it up as they go for the most part. So they have a Bible about where it begins and where it ends, and when you cut it off after one season or even two, it's frustrating to them.
Here's a letter from our retired entertainment worker, Michael, in the 415. He's up in Inverness.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Former juicer.
Yep. Uh-huh. The juicer. That's right. He says, being HBO-less, I finally managed to watch season one of Barry thanks to Netflix. Mm-hmm. It's a great show, but man, it whipsaws from funny to horrifying in a nanosecond. I'm not sure exactly why or by what dramatic mechanism, but that show really gets to me, an arrow straight through the heart in a way I haven't felt since the halcyon days of Breaking Bad. Finally finished Patriot, too, and although I really liked it, I'm not sorry it won't return. The two-season storyline had come to a reasonable end, and I didn't see much point in following John Lakeman back onto dry land. But hey, that's just one ex-juicer's opinion, though I won't deny that a gifted writer's room could breathe new life into further seasons. So it goes in the world of television. All the best to you both, Michael and the 415.
Oh, it's good to hear from Michael. I think I slightly disagree with the premise in that I want to see more John Lakeman, or I wanted to. And I think that, yeah, like you can create new and surprising turns with people and even refresh your cast, refresh your plot if you have to. So I would have liked another shot.
But that said, he is agreeing with you in the sense that he felt that it was a good end. So,
yeah, it is a good end. It's I'm sort of haunted by that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's still out there. out in the English Channel. Mm-hmm. All right, this is from Rebecca in the 020 of the plus 44. So we're going across the pond now. If I make a, and this is going to be in reference to Seth in the 617, who was asking for a show that he and his wife could watch together. If you remember that from a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I do, actually.
If I make a recommendation to Seth in the 617, he and his wife may like Leverage. Though not a spy or political show, it was pretty thrilling for a light, fun, and don't think program and was my favorite escapist show, crossed between the A-Team and Mission Impossible, about a group of criminals using their different skills to fight injustice. Very well made with a great cast and a recurring backstory with Mark Shepard as a foil who becomes an Interpol agent, which may satisfy his wife's conspiratorial needs. All five seasons available on Amazon. And as Jason recommended Humans, I must recommend Aktamannaskor, the Swedish series on which it is based, which I much preferred, even if the second series got a bit silly at times. It is available in the U.S. on Hulu as Real Humans, the literal translation of that title. The British remake uses the original as its starting point, but they go in very different directions. It misses out on all the fun of Rick, whose equivalent gets killed off in the first season, and who provides light relief that Seth may find missing in Humans. But you can watch both, as after the initial period of familiarity, they will feel like very different shows. Sadly, it was canceled after two seasons. They couldn't find the funding for a planned third. Although with 10 60-minute episodes in each, it runs almost as long as Humans does. Rebecca in the 020 of the plus 44.
Nice.
Those are good recommendations.
That's good. It's also good to hear from... We've had a stunning run of British men responding. So it's also good to know that across the pond, we have Rebecca's and plenty of other very British names for women who will be calling us and telling us their opinions.
And with that said, here is an audio file we got from across the sea from a gentleman. Here it is.
Good evening, gents. Lee from the 4-4 here. Just wanted to pick a bone with Jason, and I've got a bit of a WTF moment. I just tried to watch What We Do in the Shadows, and I've lasted maybe 3, maybe 4 minutes. I've got to the point where the guy's trying to read the letter, get him into the room, and I've just gone, no, this is not working for me. I don't get it. So I was wondering, has there been a show you've been looking forward to and you've just had to tap out after a couple of minutes and say, nope? And on that respect, I just got a trailer served to me for Snowpiercer. It looks really, really interesting. And then I see it's on TBS. What the hell is TBS? Well, I guess that's one I'm never going to see. Love to your mothers. Have a fantastic week.
I like it. The legitimate accents.
Yeah. You know, I can listen to the British and the French accents pretty much nonstop.
So let's cover this. So he doesn't like the first 3 minutes of What We Do in the Shadows. I don't know what to say. I thought it was hilarious. You liked it too.
I did. I still love that show, but I get it though. I get where you're like, oh, I cannot. I've been there. I'm trying to remember.
I try to give those shows more time before I abandon them. I will tell you, a show that I was really looking forward to because its trailer sold me on the premise was The Orville, because I thought, oh, they're going to make Galaxy Quest, basically. They're going to make a comedy about Star Trek. Great. And then I watched The Orville and I thought, oh no, they're just making Star Trek. Like 80s, 90s Star Trek, and it doesn't work for me at all, and I abandon it. But I still watch like two episodes before I abandon it. So maybe Lee is smarter than me. He immediately was like, nope, not for me. Reject
it. At least he knew. And, you know, when I teach this class that I teach in television and to have these students kind of like sort of sit up and take notice, I want them to know when they're bumping up against an opt-in or an opt-out moment. And clearly the first 3 minutes was his opt-out moment. I recently just did a piece on This Is Us. I mean, Years and Years. Sorry, This Is Us. Wow. I don't have anything against This Is Us, but so I'm just not going to talk about it. But that's funny that popped into my brain. Years and Years, it has a lot of trigger moments in it. There was a friend of mine. She lasted 18 minutes, and she was just like, nope, can't do it. It's just, you know, so a lot of people have things where they're like, no. And for me, I know that there was, what was that? Oh my God, that Fox series. It was like LA to Vegas. It was a shuttle jumping thing. I hated that. And like immediately I hated the humor and I wanted to flee running. But I will. Here's an example of like thinking, this might not be for me, and then sticking with it for a series that's going to come up. So I'm watching Carnival Row, Orlando Bloom, and was it Carla Delevingne, and a number of other really good actors. It's going to be on Amazon. It is super ambitious, and it involves like interspecies, and it's futuristic, and yet it's retro at the same time. It's got a little bit of, it's just, so you have to like be ready for it. And when it started, and there's a lot of CGI, but it's a big production, and you know, it's about fairies and regular people, and then other kind of interspecies folks, and like half animals, half people. And I'm not huge into the fantasy element, so I was really struggling. And there's a beginning moment where I was like, I saw what I would call like a logic problem, where I was like, okay, everybody's running, but why are they not flying? And so I was really struggling. I was like, I have to review this, so I have to keep going. If I wasn't reviewing it at that time, would I have started? Would I have quit because it was fantasy of the most fantastical nature? People with ram's horns on their heads and lots of makeup. That's the kind of thing that usually checks the box for me where I leave. And then he had a logic flaw. And I was, if I wasn't reviewing it, I might not have lasted. And then I stuck with it. And I have to tell you, it's a challenging series, but it's really interesting. There's no other series that's doing what it's doing. And I've really grown to appreciate its ambition, and that it's trying to, you know, it's actually trying to be part steampunk and part like, gothic, and like it's all over the place. But the more I watch of it, the acting is really good and the writing is very solid. I was just like, you know what? Okay, it takes a commitment, and I've watched 5 episodes, and I like it. So I probably wouldn't have stuck with it, or I don't know if I would have or not. I think I would have been right on the fence, but I'm happy I did. So sometimes I think it's worth it to circle back for some people. That's what I would say.
All right. Yeah, I think so. Sometimes you got to give things a chance, at least for a little while. But,
yeah, and in the future we'll have the Carnival Row review coming out, and that's on Amazon.
Great. And then as for Snowpiercer and TBS, I don't know what to say. It's TBS. Very funny.
Well, it's actually going to be on both. It'll be on TNT and
TBS. TNT
and
TBS, okay.
It doesn't make sense because they're I know what he's saying. He's probably saying, what is that? It's Turner, so if you get TNT over there, you'll see it, or maybe somebody bought it and put it on Turner. I don't know why after Turner had very cleverly and for many years delineated their brands, TNT was drama, TBS was comedy, that they take Snowpiercer and put it on there. And by the way, Snowpiercer has been held back to go on to the streaming platform as well. So 2 full seasons of Snowpiercer will have been finished before it even goes. So I actually think that's a benefit because, you know, Graham Manson is the executive producer of that, who did Orphan Black. So, you know, I know him pretty well. So I liked the movie. So, and I actually, you know, they were kind of wondering, like, is this a advantage to us that we have all this stuff in the can and we're ready to go? I think it is, because I'm like, if I like it, I'm thinking, okay, now I got 20 episodes. I got a long time. I'm not going to have any lag time, and I can just watch it all. So.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And apparently everywhere outside of the U.S. and China, it will be on Netflix. So,
oh, there you go.
That's okay. Where Lee can see it. Mike in the 415 says, guys, one quick question. What do you think are the odds that Hulu will add terriers? Hulu has the riches, so it's not such a crazy idea, is it? Or is it just wishful thinking? Or perhaps the better question, now that Disney owns FX, is there any good reason why they would not put terriers and all the other old FX shows on Hulu? Mike in the 415.
Oh, you know what? That's actually, I'm going to say this without knowing if there's any music rights holding things up.
Terriers
sure,
is on,
why wouldn't you?
Fubo TV right now, I think, which is an over-the-top service that also has some on-demand. That's the only place it is right now to stream.
I'm going to say it wouldn't surprise me. I know that's an inside joke for everybody. But it wouldn't surprise me because FX and all of FX, meaning FXX as well, all their shows are going to have a home on Hulu. So I can see that happening, definitely.
All right, let's go to Linda. She seems to be, based on her email, in the 607, but formerly of the 510, by which I know where she emailed from, and her phone number is a 510. So, you know, I did the math. I did the detective work here. Anyway, Linda says, in Tim's article in The Hollywood Reporter about summer TV, it says, I doubt anyone really found Das Boot over at Amazon. Well, it's on Hulu, so they certainly will not. I love the show, and I'm telling everyone I know about it.
Well, I will go in and fix that. You know what? That's
pretty good.
That's actually funny.
Very few people are going to find Das Boot over at Amazon.
I was right, though.
Yep.
In my defense, I was right. I doubt people will find
You did not lie. You were accurate. I also have another comment regarding YouTube TV. Sometimes on the shows I can't fast forward through commercials, it appears to run out of commercials. I get a black screen for a few minutes, and then the show comes back. The first time it happened, I thought my TV was broken. On CNN, sometimes a few commercials will play, and then I get another black screen stating it's a commercial interruption, but no commercials play. Weird. I think those are the local cable inserts, and they must not be always overplaying them with their own ads.
That is funny.
I'm also enjoying how easy it is to stop and start certain premium channels and take advantage of free trials. I'm watching Perpetual Grace on a free 30-day trial of Epix. Hey, me too, Linda. And I just watched the latest season of Shetland on a 7-day trial of BritBox, as well as the very strange short season of 5x5 with Idris Elba. Thanks. I hope you guys are having a great summer. Linda. Very nice.
Nice, Linda. Thank you. I'm going to make some
fix
fixes.
That. Make some notes, make some changes.
I'm going to do some fixes. Yeah.
All right. Our final note. Now, occasionally will send us horrible things that are happening in Australia, because we went on that whole riff about how there are drop bears and there are snakes and there's other poisonous things in Australia and we're scared. Well, four people wrote in with a link to this news story saying that you and I are doomed, because the headline is bear falls on California patrol car causing crash and fire. Yes, in California, we don't have koala bears dropping on us out of trees. We have real bears dropping out of trees. This is a Humboldt County sheriff's deputy who was driving on August 3rd, and a bear fell or jumped onto his car. So drop bears in California, I guess they really exist. He escaped without serious injury. It's unclear what happened to the bear, I guess. I don't know. Maybe the bear.
It's always unclear.
Oh, no, the bear fled the scene. So the bear, the California drop bear is still out there. But thanks to everybody.
It fled the scene like a scafflaw.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks to everybody who is reminding us that we now live in a where there are real drop bears, in a state with real drop bears. It's terrifying.
Our bears are heavier.
They are.
Of course. In America, they're fatter.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Anyway, if you would like to send us things that are not related to horrible things happening in Australia, you can tweet at us at TVTM, and you can email us at podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. Those are the best ways to do it. Anything else before we wrap it up?
I'm not going to cut you off.
You're not going to Columbo me in any way? All right. That's fair. Well, thanks to our sponsor, Mack Weldon. Tim, go buy some Mack Weldon stuff.
I'm going
to
do that.
Yes. We will be back next week. But until then, there's only one thing left for us to say.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.